The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
It's 8 a.m. on a Monday morning, September the 13th, 2021. Good old 710 KNUS, Denver's talk station. Got maybe some afternoon rain, 85. The high rain tomorrow on a Tuesday and back sunny on Wednesday. Real quick, and got a great guest. Our website, 710KNUS/Peter Boyles. Our new streaming television series, The Shoot, Episode 2 with Dick Wadhams. Also, all the info for MC1, The Honor Run, that will go September 26th from Columbine High School. In the meantime, with apologies, Doctor, I've not read your book, and I always need to be honest with folks, whether you read them or not, but I'm kind of a geeky little history reader, and I read the 1619, and it's frightening to me. Dr. Mary Graybar is with us, the book Debunking the 1619 Project. Doctor, good morning, and welcome to Denver.
Well, thank you. Good morning.
Your quick bio, please, so folks know who you are, please.
Oh, yes. I am a resident fellow here at the Alexander Hamilton Institute for the Study of Western Civilization in Clinton, New York. I taught college English for 20 years, and I've been a resident fellow here since 2014, and this is the second book that I've had published since I've been here. The first one was Debunking Howard Zinn.
Thank you. Howard needs debunked.
Yeah.
You know, I'm one of the movies that I really love is Good Will Hunting. And when they get in that moment, he's supposed to be so bright, and he tells Robin Williams, if you really want to read a good history book, read Zinn. And remember that part of the movie?
Oh, yes, it's featured in my book, uh-huh.
Oh, okay, because I haven't read that book either. I apologize. But the fact that we're supposed to be this brilliant kid who knows about agricultural colonialism and the rise of mercantilism, then he says, read Howard Zinn. I went, oh, man. So I already love you. We've never met. tell me, when you got on to Howard Zinn?
When I was teaching at the college level, I was seeing the corruption of education from the inside and was writing articles about it and had started my own nonprofit called Dissident Prof.
Okay.
And in 2008, while Howard Zinn was still alive, I became aware of him and started writing articles about him. So he is, it eventually, after a long story of publishers, mix-ups and stuff, it was published in 2019.
Yeah.
But, I've been always concerned about the corruption of education, the distortion of American history, the anti-Americanism, and that's what also led me to write Debunking the 1619 Project, which came out of only a couple years ago, and I read that, and I was just appalled. I mean, I couldn't believe it. And the fact that it's also in schools, over 4,500 schools, it was immediately distributed to 3,500 schools.
How much of that is a precursor to critical race theory, do you believe?
There are two sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
So in order to accept critical race theory, you have to accept the version of history that is presented in the 1619 Project. And that version of history looks at people as groups.
Mm-hmm.
It looks at it in a neo-Marxist view as conflicts between classes and races. And so this distorted history buttresses critical race theory.
What's your PhD in? What area?
It's in English.
Just because I love stuff like this, what was your thesis?
Oh, my dissertation was focused on Walker Percy, a conservative Catholic a writer.
No, and where? What school? Where'd you get it from?
University of Georgia.
That's hard to do. So my hat's off to you again. People write history with purpose. I'm a big reader. I'm currently reading Victor Davis Hanson's World Wars II, the plural World Wars II. It's brilliant. And I get trapped in reading. And when I see things like the 1619, and I've not read your book, with apologies, but I've read lots of critiques. What is the purpose of 1619?
Well, there's a political agenda. The creator of it is a far-left race journalist by the name of Nicole Hannah Jones. She has expressed her admiration for Fidel Castro's Cuba. She tweets constantly upholding the far-left, the squad agenda. She has written a long article advocating reparations. And so it is a political project. It is intended to turn students into far-left activists, into little neo-Marxists. Oh,
sure. I mean, it's interesting. We know that, you know, Lenin's wife got her hands on the education. Hitler knew about education. The Imperial Japanese knew about education. Totalitarians, well, Orwell himself knew that what was Winston Smith's job was to rewrite history, correct?
That's correct, yes. So, and if you rewrite it, there is no memory of the way things were before, when we had freedom and what the vision was of the founders.
And when someone in history is interpretive, and there are these people that are called court historians, the Victor Victor writes the history, but and then comes the revisionist, and there's all these different schools of history. I try and talk a little bit about that from time to time on the radio show. But the revisionists that appear, they appear principally in the 60s. And William Appleman Williams and Garo Porowitz and, you know, I mean, guys that were, you know, really hardcore. And I read them, and I suspect you read them too. But now comes this. And the idea is that this kind of, what was the, in the mindset, and by the way, wasn't she denied tenure, Hannah Jones, or was she granted tenure?
She finally was granted tenure at UNC Chapel Hill after she sued and after she had a lot of students and faculty protesting the denial of tenure. But then she turned that down. Yeah. It was all planned, it looked like.
Yeah. What's she doing now?
Oh, she is going to head up with Ty-Nehisi Coates, her friend, this multi-million-dollar initiative on race at Howard University and teach there.
She's not even a historian, is she? I mean, by training.
No, she has an undergraduate in history and her master's in journalism. Okay. But the narrative that she presents in her, quote, history is that of Lerone Bennett, who was a 1960s radical who coined the term black power.
Sure. Our guest is Dr. Mary Graybar. I will read the book, Debunking the 1619. So why is that year so important, 1619, to use it in the title?
Well, what she wants to do is she wants to replace 1776 with 1619, when the white lion brought, you know, the first Africans, it is thought, to these shores in Jamestown. So her thesis that she is promoting is that this country was not founded on the principles of liberty and equality, but was founded as a slaveocracy. And so for the longest time on her Twitter feed, she actually had 1619 cross, or 1776 crossed out and replaced by 1619. So it's basically to eliminate even the 4th of July.
But isn't it true that the Spaniards, prior to that, had made slave transactions in a modern South Carolina, that there were the buying and selling had taken place? The Spaniards always get a break. They always, you know, everything that happens. I mean, they laugh, but I see that. It's the Spanish, because I think of the Spanish language, Spanish culture, Mexico, Central America, that you can hang it on Columbus, but you don't bring it on the conquistadores. But is that true or not true that it was a Spanish transaction maybe years before 1619?
Yes, there was in the previous century, and I go into that a little bit in debunking the 1619 project, but that settlement did not last.
Right, right.
So the reason they focus on Jamestown was because, you know, that was English,
yep.
and
white,
and that's when everything started here for this country.
And when I come back, the purpose of this and purposeful rewriting of history, and that's like we mentioned, totalitarian regimes. I can only imagine what they do in North Korea. I've read Dear Leader and all those books about the history of the Kims. Doctor, it's done with purpose, is it not?
Yes, of course. It is, deliberately, presented as one side and mm-hmm. distorted, and so many things are left out. I mean, you would think after just reading the 1619 Project, and if you are a student K through 12, this is what you read, that basically, the American colonists invented slavery,
no.
that it hadn't existed, and that the country, that independence was fought to preserve slavery, or at least it was a major reason. There was a slight correction in the middle of the night with the addition of two words, but you would not know about it as a worldwide phenomenon since time immemorial.
And in fact, slavery is a very old world tradition, is it not? And did not Native people enslave?
Absolutely, they did. And I go into that. And it was practiced across the globe in 1776, not in Western Europe, not right there generally, but it was in the colonies and, of course, not in Antarctica, but every place else. It was being practiced. So it was not a uniquely American phenomenon, as the 1619 Project says.
And it continues in the world today, does it not?
It does, absolutely. There are places in the Middle East, Mauritania, it's officially legally outlawed, but it's still being practiced. And it's the lighter-skinned Muslims that enslave the darker-skinned sub-Saharan Africans. And the enslavement is passed on from generation to generation.
But it's not, I mean, traditionally, if that's a word that can apply to this, it was not about skin color, was it?
No, of course not. Mm. I was born, I'm Slavic. I was born in Slovenia.
Oh, wow.
and, you know, the word slave comes
absolutely.
From
absolutely.
Slav, right?
That's absolutely true, yeah.
Okay, so these were white people who were enslaved. Just about every ethnicity and race has been enslaved, except for Muslims, by other Muslims. But it has been practiced everywhere, and as far back as we can go in history.
And I always think that's interesting as a reader, when populations become enslaved, it traditionally mattered not. I mean, it didn't matter. I think the only aspect you point out was religion, and it only protected certain amounts of people. But being enslaved, the Romans, it's one of the reasons, of course, that the empire fails. But and slavery seems to be a reason other empires fail. I was reading last night, the Persian Empire was there's two debates. What were the two largest empires ever to exist? And the Persians controlled 41% of the world's population when they were an empire. However, the British colonial empire controlled far more territory. And each of them fail. And why did the original slavers, and how did they operate? What was the what was the mercantile part of this? How do you get people and how do you sell people?
Well, in 1619, you know, slavery, you know, wasn't being practiced. It evolved in Jamestown. It wasn't until, you know, around the 1640s that it became solidified into law. And as I, one of my chapters deals in debunking the 1619 Project deals with black slave owners. And actually the first legal case, the precedent for owning another person as a slave was established by one of the Africans that was initially brought over, Anthony Johnson, whose slave, John Caser, sued for his freedom, claiming he was just an indentured servant and that his term was over, but the court ruled in favor of Anthony Johnson. So ironically, you know, that's where you have the start of it. And of course, it wasn't firmly ensconced until the 1690s, and it was also being practiced in Massachusetts. So it was a system that evolved, and ultimately, as you were talking about empires, one of my chapters in debunking the 1619 Project goes into the economic argument, the false economic argument. Slavery never resulted in a profitable economic system.
No, it did not. It actually ended many of them.
That's right, and the same could be said of the American South. It was not an efficient system.
No, it was caving in on itself. And
correct.
And I our guest, this is great, Mary Graybar. I've not read the book, Debunking the 1619 Project. I'm just a reader about stuff like this, but the idea, again, from my reading, is that we find this country, and this negates, you know, all the New Englanders and everybody gets thrown out the window. Simply because we wanted a slaveocracy. And so forget Adams and forget Franklin and forget all these other brave men. And I mean, I get trapped in this. What do we do with that?
Well, I think the thing is that, you know, the falsehoods need to be exposed. And that's why I wrote Debunking the 1619 Project. So people can have a resource. Parents and citizens and grandparents and some teachers are up in arms over this false history. They know it's wrong. You can just read it once through. And even if you don't know much about history, you can tell this is propaganda. And so I wanted to offer a resource. So when they're, you know, testifying and fighting school boards and, you know, the administrators and so forth, they can say, well, on page such and such, it says here this, but it's wrong. And I have the footnotes to show that, you know, I have spent a considerable amount of time on research. I've gone through journals and books and consulted with some of, you know, the foremost authorities on slavery and the founding. And I'm very fortunate to be here where, you know, we have a historian who's the president of the Alexander Hamilton Institute, Robert Paquette.
Can I hold you through a break? Can you stay with us?
Sure.
Would you, by the way, give the name of your publisher, give all that stuff and a website before we pause.
Okay.
If you would, please.
Oh, yes. It is Regnery. And the publisher is Regnery. And you can go to the website and order there. There are four different ways to order. There's Amazon and Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, indie bookstores. You go to my website, marygraybar.com. I have a link there. And my other nonprofit is dissidentprof.com. Also encourage people to sign up for my newsletter.
When we come back, I want to ask you how much personal heat you've taken as well. Dr. Mary Graybar is here debunking the 1619. Back with us is Cowboy Moving and Storage, the recommended mover. This is the time of year people move. Go to cowboymoving.com. They come with us, and they're the best, and you can read the customer reviews, and owners and operators are Michael and Sherry Gale Folsom, and family-owned and operated. We've had lunch with them, sat and talked with them, been to their operation, family-owned, and same family since 1968. Cowboy provides residential commercial moves throughout Colorado, stores your valuables, people are moving. So, just a little bit, just the heavy stuff, beating out you and your brother-in-law in a rented truck. Got a big commercial, got an office move. Cowboy specializes. Moving grandmas. Cowboy specializes. You're going to store stuff. Cowboy specializes. State-of-the-art equipment, accessories, ensure your move goes perfect. And what makes Cowboy the recommended mover is the men to actually do the work. Many of the guys have been with Cowboy now for years, and they truly take, again, all the care. They make the difference. Let them at least give you an estimate. From moves to loads to storage, Cowboy has been Colorado's recommended mover since 68. They donate a portion of every move to Freedom Service Dogs. They just do it right. So if you got a move coming and you want to do it right, 303-789-2200, easy number. They'll send out somebody to do an estimate. The guys work hard. Years ago, we did a move, and we worked with them, and they work in the ground. Cowboy, residential, commercial moves. Just get an estimate from our friends, 303-789-2200 today. It is 26 minutes after the hour. Stephen this afternoon, 710 KNUS. He's going to do the cigar thing with Dennis Prager. You can see all that stuff at 710KNUS.com. 85 will be the high tomorrow, 74. Get some rain. The website, the shoot, episode 2 with Dick Wadhams is there. And the MC1, we'll talk more about that tomorrow. You heard me say that health is wealth and good health at any age is possible. I'm living proof. Dr. McKellen actually is underwriting the shoot episodes. Help you with your metabolism, hormones, get things balanced, healthy. Create a program that's designed right for you to help you focus, become stronger, and feel in control of your life again. Do not suffer with low energy, lack of focus, unintentional weight gain, poor sleep, libido, all this different stuff. She's the best. 720-387-3681. 720-387-3681. 720-387-3681. They answer the phone, arrange the free 20-minute phone call with Dr. McKellen. Go to the website, denver.cenogenics.com. Fall is in the air. She'll change your life. Get ready to go. 720-387-3681. A wonderful guest. We'll get her back. PhD Mary Graybar is our guest, debunking the 1619 Project. I have not read the book with apologies, but I read a bunch about 1619, and I love history, so she's great. How much personal attack have you taken since doing the book?
Well, what they do, the critics do, especially the creator of the project, is they ignore you until something happens like the White House Conference on American History, where I was a panelist almost exactly a year ago on Constitution Day. You may recall that conference that was, that President Trump had in the National Archives, where I talked about Howard Zinn. I was working on debunking the 1619 Project at the time. And then they started coming out of the woodwork and started attacking. And I suppose if there is something else like that, that directly threatens their stranglehold.
Yep.
But what they do is the most common word I think that was used to attack me was fascist. I was also accused of being a racist.
Oh, yeah, sure. That's hand in glove.
Yeah. So I had this professor from the State University of New York at Geneseo here, who teaches Indian studies, attacking me on Twitter, and then they all pile on, and none of them have even so much as cracked open any book that I've written or read, what I've written in terms of articles, and they just you know, if you are opposed to them and their view of history, you are automatically a racist and a fascist.
Of course.
So I suppose that's going on.
Well, you know, that's the sadness of all of this. And the people who scream fascist the loudest seem to reflect the values of fascism more than the other side.
Oh, absolutely. They don't. They will not engage in a conversation.
Oh, no.
And they will not, you know, have their points corrected. One thing I pride myself on in my two books, including, you know, Debunking the 1619 Project, is that I have other people read the chapters.
Sure.
And no one is perfect. No, you know, we all make mistakes. But, you know, and the best way to ensure that those are corrected is to listen to the criticism, make the corrections that are necessary. But the so-called historians support Nicole Hannah-Jones, who really is quite ignorant of history and is operating out of her own sense of bitterness, her personal bitterness, and has this political agenda.
I'm going to take a wild guess. Have you been condemned by the Southern Poverty Law Center?
I don't know if I've had the honor of being named by them.
Just a thought. You know, there's some, I bet she was condemned. Because, you know, like I use Nietzsche's line all the time. Don't tell me who likes you. Tell me who doesn't like you. And then I will know who you are. And I said, I wonder if Dr. Graybar has been condemned or put on the hit list by the Southern Poverty Law Center. You'd make perfect foils for them.
Well, yeah, their so-called study justified the 1619 Project, actually, and Nicole Hannah-Jones often refers to their bogus study.
Yeah, I've read that.
And so there you go.
I know too much about the Poverty Law Center. Anytime you want to, and we have local TV and media outlets that just quote them constantly. And I said, do you have any idea how bad they are? But that doesn't matter. So what I'm concerned now, what I say, I have a grandson who's just, he's my guy. And what I'm watching is teaching children. Now, you know, adults, you and I, if we consider ourselves adults, we can wade through a book and we can pick and choose if you ever, you know, a level of intelligence and you read a lot. You can read books and history books, and that I, you know, love history books, and come up with my own conclusions. Little guys in classrooms can't, and that's my fear, Doctor.
Oh, absolutely. They are emotionally bullied with this. It's like I said, it's been adapted to grades beginning in kindergarten. They, you know, these little kids have no a perspective. They can't match it against, you know, something else they've read. They are young. And it also pits them against each other on the basis of race.
Absolutely.
So if you read the 1619 Project, all white people were either enslavers or benefited from slavery and were racists. All black people were virtuous and victims and fighters for democracy and freedom. That's toxic.
Yes.
This
idea of taking little kids, you know, used to be an old term called white guilt. This is white blame. I mean, I've read the critiques. You can't take a little kid and tell them that. I mean, but they do, don't they?
Yes, they do. And, you know, I'm the mother of an adult son, and I know, you know, from experience that little kids naturally don't care what race their friends are.
That's true.
They care about their common interests, you know, playing together. Mm-hmm. But the 1619 Project introduces racial conflict.
And where can that end? I mean, I come back to, you know, the worst of the worst, but, you know, when Jews get singled out, beginning in the 20s. And I can't play with you anymore. We can't be friends anymore. And that kind of and then that ends up as it ends up and ends up in a very horrible place. But there are early Americans, framers, I I'm a John Adams guy. I read John Adams. I've read Tom Paine. They were not only they spoke. They were opposed to slavery, and John Adams in particular. I'm a John Adams fan. What does critical race do with Adams and Paine and others? James Otis is another one. What do they do with them?
Well, I go into detail about Thomas Jefferson and debunking the 1619 mm-hmm. Project, because he is a major figure who is attacked. He was considered to be the apostle of freedom, and then, of course, Abraham Lincoln, the great emancipator. But even Jefferson, who owned hundreds of slaves, who was born into a slave-owning family, wanted to end slavery. He did not do it in the time frame and the manner that is demanded mm-hmm. by the 1619 Project. But he spent a lifetime trying to think of a way to end slavery, but peacefully. He could see the Civil War coming on, and he tried to think of a way to prevent it and to end slavery. So, one of the big lies of the 1619 Project is that Jefferson never intended mm-hmm. to abolish slavery. That is absolutely wrong.
You know, there's a term called the lens of history, or through the lens of history, or viewing through the lens of history, which I really love that line. And we see these people, and I use this term a lot. These were men of their times. And so when I see people take the politically correct philosophical historical view of 2021 and apply it to Columbus, or apply it to fill in the blank, and that's not only unfair and unjust, but it's also stupid. What do we do with that?
Well, as I, used to tell my students when I was teaching, that people are complicated, and you can tell when a work of literature is good. You have complex characters, and it's the same in history. No one is completely good or completely bad. Consider that Thomas Jefferson, his earliest memory was of being carried on horseback mm-hmm. by a trusted slave. Mm-hmm. So he was 2 or 3 years old. This is what he was born into. He inherited slaves. His father died when he was 14 yes. years old. When he came of age, he had to take care of his mother's estates. You could not go anywhere without, seeing slaves around. It was extremely difficult to even free slaves. If you were concerned about their welfare, you had to make all kinds of arrangements, to just set someone free would, put them in danger of losing their life. So it's incredibly complicated. What they do is they take the situation we have today and apply it
that's
to
right.
something that happened in the 18th and 19th century.
Oh, sure. Worse yet, the first one that kicked this off was taking on Columbus. And the first stoppage of a Columbus Day Parade actually took place here. And it was a bunch of elderly North Denver Italian men and women who celebrate Columbus, and it was stopped by a bunch of young, some of them were like not really Native Americans, but claimed it, that kind of thing, and they bullied them. And that when did the attack on Columbus begin historically? Because that was sort of a jump start for some of this.
Yeah, well, it actually, was building momentum, but, during the 500th anniversary mm-hmm. celebration leading up to it in 1992, that's when you really started seeing the attacks. And, of course, you had all the far left people who were starting to dominate academia.
Mm-hmm.
And, so that's when you really saw the big effort. They wanted they wanted to destroy Columbus Day. And, you know, that's something that's in my debunking Howard Zinn book about how, you know, that started. It was started by his friend who was a socialist novel playwriter. And, you know, Howard Zinn plagiarized his work, you know, filled with falsehoods, and presented that as history. And he was quite proud of that achievement. So that's when you really see that big push. They wanted to, you know, rain on that Columbus Day parade.
I always think, our guest is Dr. Mary Graybar, debunking the 1619 Project. I always think, you know, when this whole thing started, and they'd say, Peter, we just want Robert E. Lee. And then they get Kate Smith. Wait a minute. You know, and now there was book burnings over the weekend. And it all begins with Columbus. And Columbus is such a debatable character. But he's simply a man of his time. No more, no less. The same things were happening in Europe, were happening in the New World, were happening everywhere. And these people have this ability, like vultures, you know, to pick and choose their victim. Mary, speak to that.
Yeah, they do that. They, you know, their aim, as we saw last summer in the, 1619 riots, is to destroy history itself. I mean, these radicals who hate America, been taught to hate America, in their rage, attack everyone. I mean, I pointed out in my opening chapter in debunking the 1619 Project what it was like a little bit of that summer, if people can remember, when, in some places you could not drive because you were blocked, and restaurants, tables were being overturned. These mobs were assaulting. Even Union statues of Union soldiers and Elks. And it's just this irrational rage against the country. And we saw that play out last summer. So it's not a specific complaint that they have. And President Trump was absolutely right when, they started going for the Confederate statues. He said, who's going to be next? Jefferson, Lincoln.
We all knew that.
Washington.
And they were.
And,
they are.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
But once the monster starts to eat, once the witch hunting begins, and I don't, like I said, it's happened again and again and again and again. It's what Orwell's entire whole history as a novelist is exactly about that. And now, of course, they're hunting Orwell. And what Donald Trump said was they'll never be, witch hunters are never satisfied. And then, as come true, they eventually hunt themselves.
That's right.
So.
That's right.
And so, dot, dot, dot. What do you think's next? What happens next?
Well, the situation looks pretty dire, but, one thing that I am encouraged by is the fact that citizens are finally rising up. One of my frustrations when back in the 1990s and, 2000, early 2000s was that, I seemed to be speaking out into the void. I was trying to tell the public, look, this is what's going on. This is what I'm seeing. I'm seeing multicultural math. I'm seeing Howard Zinn being snuck into classrooms. And it was hard to get people to organize, speak out, get these professors fired, these teachers fired. But now we're seeing this. I mean, I think the 1619 Project has just is one of those examples that has just taken it so far that people can't ignore it any longer. We've had biased textbooks and lessons, but this really takes the cake, and it's being imposed on young children. And so I encourage people to get out there. There is strength in numbers. I hope that my book, Debunking the 1619 Project, will be of help in rebutting the educrats, the administrators that are promoting this false history called the 1619 Project.
And history is on their side. So that's what I love about you. You're terrific. We will have you back. Dr. Mary Graybar, it's G-R-A-B-A-R, Debunking the 1619 Project. By the time we speak again, I'll have read your book. So with apologies, I really appreciated the hour. You're terrific, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you. I look forward to it.
Be safe. All right, everybody. Home buyers have a lot on their plate these days, trying to get everything right, the lender and the dream home. And it's stressful without the right team on your side. Why you need American. Let them guide you through all of this. Customers, you got the low rate loan. Here's what I would do. Call them up, pick up the phone, and start. There's no obligation, no upfront, no hidden fees. Lock them to a low rate now before they're gone. Pre-qualify in as little as 10 minutes. I trusted them. They did the job. American Financing, 303-695-7000. 303-695-7000. Apply online, AmericanFinancing.net. Please, 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 please. NMLS 182-334. Regulated by the Division of Real Estate, but 303-695-7000. 303-695-7000. Get it done. Save money every month. Drop the payment. Lower the time. You got to do it. Lock in the rate. 303-695-7000. Here we go, everybody. Coming up on time, Stefan is this afternoon. Back here tomorrow morning at 5. Packed house again. A reminder, the MC1 Foundation was started in 2014 when we lost a really brave man. Sergeant Dave Baldwin was killed. His radio sign was MC1. We go now on the 26th back to Columbine High School. Last year, because of the COVID, went to Rocky Mountain Harley. Now we're back, and everybody will be there. If you ride a motorcycle, boy, I want you to be there. Please, 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 we'll ride, have a good time. End up in the summit. We'll have guys on from the summit tomorrow as well. Also, on the web, 710KNUS/Peter Boyles, The Shoot. Episode 2 of The Shoot with Dick Wadhams. I think it's really good, modestly he says. And so that's really working out well. A lot of people are watching The Shoot, make me happy. So, again, the MC1 Foundation, the honor run that goes for people struck down the line of duty, police officers and first responders, firefighters. It's really been good. And so take a look. If you ride, I want to see you. It'd be fun to do. And the summit's a great place, and it ends up there. It's 100% volunteer organization, so got all the bells and whistles, and everybody be with us. So look at it. It's on the 26th of September, and everybody will be there to fundraise. The gates will open, as they say, at Columbine High School at 8 a.m. on that Sunday morning, the 26th of this month. All right, Billy, we ready? We're close. Stretch it out. Stretch it out. Wait for the music. That's a good show, everybody. Thank you. Got a minute to music. You can't do that to me. Anyhow, the website every year, the MC1, selects a public service employee who's been injured in the line of duty as the honor run and sort of the beneficiary. The foundation commits to provide support for them throughout the year. And boy, there's some guys on. I was at a meeting last week, and they were telling stories about the men who had been injured this year, and it's brutal. So put it down and get on your sickle, as they said, and Marlon Brando and a wild one. I just want to ride my sickle. We'll go ride your sickle. We'll do that. I'll stretch a little time here. 85 the high and shot at rain. Tomorrow, cooler and rain, sunny and warmer. And Stephen Tubbs is this afternoon. Get me out of this, Billy. I've tapped it out. There it is. There's the music. We'll see what happens. And I don't know. There's a lot to be learned. Let's all learn it. Take care of yourselves. Thanks, Billy Thorpe. See you tomorrow morning at 5 a.m.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.